What can't God do? Today on Where We Begin. Hey guys, welcome to Where We Begin, a brand new podcast where we discuss some of the toughest objections to Christianity. I'm your host, Derek Caldwell. I'm joined here by three colleagues and three friends. Lou, don't start.
It's a stretch.
The first episode.
Let's just say colleagues.
I'll be your friend, Derek.
Thank you.
I'll be your friend.
Lou, pretend you're holy at least for the next 20 minutes. And anyway, yeah, I'm going to introduce everyone. We've got Alicia Wood, Lou Phillips, and Zandra Carroll. Would you guys just take a little bit of time and introduce yourselves?
Sure. I'm Zandra, and I have a background in biological science, and I am a Christian apologist.
Great. I'm Lou Phillips. I study molecular biology, but I don't remember anything from it. And I typically speak on like sexuality, identity, and purpose.
All right. My name is Alicia Wood. I have a background in criminal justice and social justice and sociology. So I do a lot of people watching and talking about crime scenes. And I like speaking on everything because I get bored very quickly. And I look for the new and latest and greatest.
Yes. Alicia always has some new bizarre question to ask.
Derek, what about you? We don't know anything about you. We'd love to.
We don't even know who you are.
Host of Where We Begin. Is that it?
No, this is more about you. I'm a very godly man,
and so humble too.
Yeah, and that's about it. Also studied biology. Also, don't remember any of it. So there we go.
Guys.
Yeah.
Sorry.
And luckily, or providentially, we're not talking about biology today.
Great.
Okay. Aww.
Yes.
That's the segue. Good. What we are talking about.
What about your theology degree?
I've also got that. A little bit of history.
That's enough. That's enough about you, Derek. Yeah. That's good.
He's cooler than he makes himself out to me.
For those of you who stuck with us through that, we do have, I think, a really interesting question today. It's an age-old question, really, when it comes to apologists. And it's essentially asked like this: Can God create a rock so heavy that he cannot lift it? So it sounds kind of funny, and it's usually asked by skeptics, I think, who are trying to point out the absurdity of omnipotence, or just a big fancy word that means God is all-powerful. But a lot of times when Christians hear this for the first time, they do get very freaked out to start thinking, oh, one of those two things God can't do. So, Lou, would you like to start us out? And what, because the question essentially is, what can't God do? That's a strange question.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Derek, for giving me that opportunity. Yeah. I'm so delighted. I think this is a brilliant question. It's something I even wrestled with. And to Derek, your point, like, I think when I first heard it as a kid, because it is one of those questions, I think your friends that are skeptical of your faith come up to you like, do you think God can do that? And like, I don't. It's like, if I say yes or no, I'm wrong. So I was like, I don't know what to do here. And I think it does come down to we have to define the word omnipotence well. And I think for a lot of Christians, maybe the word omnipotence was kind of given this overarching narrative, just like, whatever he wants to do kind of thing. Nothing is impossible. There's nothing. It's like, and that's a really, it's a really inaccurate definition of the word, because it doesn't mean that God has the ability to do the absurd, to do what is logically impossible. And so, yeah, like Xander, adding into that, like when somebody's asked you this question, I'm curious, like what's your beginning starting point?
Addressing, as we sort of did, this idea that's been thrown out, especially from the church pulpit, that, you know, there is nothing that God can't do. And you'll hear that in a sermon. There's nothing God can't do, which is true in the proper context. And so, of course, this comes back to the terminology, omnipotence. What do we mean when we say that God is all powerful? As the Westminster Catechism says, God can do all his holy will. So God can do all his holy will, meaning he cannot contradict himself. He cannot cease to be God. He cannot lie. And the Bible does talk about things that God can't do, but it's usually in the context of things that he's without. Like in James, there's a term there that's often said that God cannot be tempted. He tempts no one and he cannot be tempted. But it really means he is without temptation. Like, so can God make a square circle? I mean, that's asking him to do something that is illogical. It's not about his ability. God can't cease to be God.
That kind of reminds me of something John Lennox says. I think it's one of his books. He says something about like nonsense is still nonsense, even when somebody, even when a scientist asks it. But it's of the same things. Like just because you're saying words doesn't mean it actually, like is the sentence that you're saying, is it coherent? Is it possible to answer the question? Just because you put the words "can God" in front of something doesn't actually make it a coherent sentence.
Yeah. And I think the thing, and in agreement with what you were saying about, you know, God can do whatever and everything's possible with God, I also would hear people say God can do anything but fail. And that was a common thing I'd hear people saying. And I remember the first time somebody was kind of brought to my attention, well, God can't do everything. I just had never thought about it. You think if it's God and he's so great and he's so perfect, then yeah, he can do everything because his power is limitless. But you don't think it's, you don't realize that it's his very nature that limits him. Mm-hmm. So like you said, Zandra, like he can't do logically impossible, you know, make a square circle or married bachelor, but it's his character that means that he also can't tell us to do evil. Like he can't command us to do something that's contrary to him. He can't tell us to serve other gods, you know, or he can't say you need to worship other gods. Like there's things that he can't actually ask us to do or his goodness is affected. And for me to first hear that was like, wow, I just had never thought about it, but it totally makes sense. That in order for him to be God, his nature has to be consistent. Yeah.
And that makes me think, and maybe Derek will go here, who knows, so I'll let him go here. But like that's exactly like the age-old Euthyphro dilemma that we know. Mm-hmm. Plato created, right? Plato invented this story with Socrates and the character Euthyphro. And they're talking about this idea, are good things good because they're good, or are they good because God commanded them to be good, right? And so which one is it? Either something like killing someone is always wrong, or, and God is subject to whatever this value is, or God could at one day just say, no, you can do whatever you want. Like whatever he decrees is good. And that does get down to like exactly what you said, Alicia, is like he is actually limited to his own nature. Right. He has subjected himself to his own, like he's not going to go outside of who he is. And I do think that's interesting too, specifically for the Christian God, because he has attributes that like, when I have something that I have can be taken from me. He doesn't have these things. He is these things. Like this is why the Bible and John says that he is love. That's a fascinating thing that Christianity gets to say, because it's not, if he is community, he's always been love. He's always been in relationship. And so that's a true character. He's not just loving. And so this divine nature of God, specifically within Christianity, I think, is like the hinge and the crux of this question.
Right, and it matters if that's where you get your morality from. If God is your moral, like the author of morality that you're following for your life, and you see an inconsistency within his nature, then you're wondering, right, is this good because God says it, or is it good in of itself? And God is just telling us what the good thing is. How can we trust anything? Yeah. And so the his nature is essential, and the consistency within it helps us to even just, not just answer this question, but even how do we live?
Yeah, so essentially what I hear you touching on is it really does come down to God's nature. And you mentioned you mentioned several things, but there were two things that I thought were interesting. First, you mentioned God can't do that which is logically absurd, and I'll have a quick follow-up on that. But then secondly, even the looking to God for our morality, and God can't do that which is immoral. So first, the question I would ask is, if we say that God, and you may have already touched on this with the nature part, but if we say that God cannot do the logically absurd, is there something that exists outside of God called logic that he has, like that's a law he has to follow? Or is it just a property of his nature? Like, is there some Platonic form floating out there that God can't violate?
I feel like you want to answer that question, Derek.
I don't. I want to.
I feel like this is a test.
My answer, I mean, I just have a quick, I would say no, he's not subject to anything but himself. And in the realm of logic, like that is actually an outflow of who he is. But I don't know if anybody would say
that. No, I mean, yeah, to that point, I think that is an intrinsic, I don't know how I want to say this. So what I'm thinking of now is the beginning of John. The Gospel of John says, in the beginning is the Word, the Word. Like, so the Word was God, but the Word was with God. Mm-hmm. And it's this mysterious kind of description, but that Word, of course, in Koine is logos, which is where we get our word logic from. And I do think that that is a reference to Christ, that through him all things were created. But it's interesting to me that it's that word that John picked up on to use. So I think logic is an intrinsic, maybe could we say a facet or a component of God's character. So it's not that it's a law that he has to, some sort of external thing that he has to abide by, but it's perhaps, you know, it's like I don't have to follow the laws of my arm. My arm is a part of me and it enables me to be who I am and do what I do. And so that's kind of what I think about the logic of God. I could be wrong. I'm still sort of thinking it through as I'm saying it.
No, it's interesting. There were some ancient philosophers even who, interestingly enough, through the logic of the universe, the fact that it made sense, that nature had laws to them that pointed to a monotheistic God over against what their culture was saying about polytheism, which is maybe part of why John found that to be such a useful word.
I think even like if you're going to the heart of what this question, what we're really asking is like, what's the most powerful thing? Like that's really what we're, is there something there? And like, and so say to someone that is wrestling with it, well, no, I think there is this value of logic that's above God. It's like, well, then that thing just became the thing you're talking about. Like that, like something eventually gets into the place of God. As Christians, we believe it is the God, the triune God of Christianity. And you're going to have to argue why you think the thing you're saying is the ultimate thing. But we think very clearly through scripture all throughout it that it is saying that, no, nothing, he is subject to nothing but himself. And that's it's a bold claim and it's something everybody has to wrestle with. But like everyone has to wrestle with that concept. You have to get to, where do I get this concept of any of these things? And what is subject? What is everything subject to? There's an answer for that. I just think it's the Christian God.
Yeah. So I want to change directions here a little bit because I think this also comes up. There is some relation here even to the problem of evil, which comes up a lot. And Alvin Plantinga, who, you know, really is the one most well known for sort of critiquing and perhaps defeating the logical problem of evil, essentially said that perhaps the way around this is that with the problem of evil, is it a logical impossibility that God could create a free world that did not have evil in it? And so when people wrestle with this, is that also something God can't do?
Yeah, and I think it was Plantinga who went on to say that, so this is the best of all possible worlds. I believe that was him. And so therefore, because if there was a world in which he could have created free beings where there wasn't evil, he would have done it. And so the fact that we are in this world, meaning that this is the best of all the possible worlds that he could create. I think it was Plantinga who had that idea as well. And so, I do think the evil thing does play a part here, and especially when we're talking about the nature of God, because if we're saying that God does evil, then we have an issue with his character. If we're saying that God creates a free people who can do evil, then we don't. Because when he creates something and has a purpose for it, the violation of that purpose that the people choose to do is no longer on him. And so now you don't have a conflict of character or nature kind of issue. So I would tend to think, I don't think that God could have created a different world where that would have been better or better than this one. And because I do think he would have in turn have done that. But I mean, that's pure speculation. That's, you know, in that regard. But it doesn't seem to make sense to me that there would be a better option out there that God would not have chosen. But I mean, I don't have any way to back
that
up.
Yeah, no, that's
this gets
that's bold.
This is
no. It's interesting because we, you guys don't know these questions when I give them to you for the most part.
No, we don't.
And Lou and I talked about this a little bit earlier. He didn't know it was going to come up later, though.
Oh, great.
But. If that's the case, then a question some of you may have received before is then, well, how do you make sense of the new earth or heaven, where you do have this place where we assume there will be freedom and we assume there will not be sin? So Yeah. What would you?
Yeah, great.
Well, I just one preliminary thought. I don't know if this is even in the correct ballpark, but I think this might come back to the question of character and will. And I think part of what's going to happen to us, because we're going to be changed as well, is it's not that God is going to force our will in any way, but it's that we will be pure, we'll be refined, we won't be jealous of each other, we won't be the way that we were before, we won't think the way that we thought before. And I think that changed nature of us is really going to impact every level, the way we interact with God, the way we interact with each other, the way we interact with nature, the way that we see ourselves. It's going to change everything. It's going to be redeemed. It's going to be correct. So I think that also plays into
the new heaven. That's fundamentally different than the starting point. And that's the thing I think we get hooked up on. It's like, well, then wasn't Adam and Eve perfect? Like, what was, weren't they, like, what's so different about the, you know, only for some reason, I think for like only in the Christian worldview, you do have this idea of like the starting point being like, so good, so and yet it's better in the end. Like God has the ability of taking something already, like I'm not going to use the word perfect, but you get, you know why. But there's something there's like amazing, and like He said, it's very good. And yet in the end, we're not just image bearers; we're sons and daughters. We're grafted in, and so there is this concept of like there's a renewed heart. Like we're now given the mind of Christ. We are now like in a glorified sense, and we'll have full sanctification in this new earth. So I think I already see that now, to be honest, Eric. Yes, do I still sin? Absolutely. But there's an aspect of where God has changed my nature where I don't want to anymore, like to certain levels. Like, and it's a beautiful thing that I just was not capable of doing. And so I think you times that by infinity. You time when you're actually in the present and you're now grafted into the family, I do think there's a genuine ontological change that happens now that is on a trajectory towards infinity. So as we keep developing and as we're fully sanctified, I think it seems like there's a contradiction there, but I don't believe it's true. I think it's an apparent contradiction.
And I guess I think Revelation 21 is helpful here, and I'll just read just a little bit of it. This is 21. I guess I'm going to start at verse 3. This is 3 and 4, and it says, this is John speaking. He says, I heard a loud voice from the throne saying, look, God's dwelling place is now among the people, and He will dwell with them. He's talking about the future. They will be His people, and God Himself will be with them and be their God. He will wipe every tear from their eyes. There will be no more death or mourning or crying or pain, for the old order of things has passed away. And this was a question I feel like that was really popular, like I want to say several years ago. I just kept hearing people saying, can we sin in heaven? Can we sin in heaven? And wondering about the angels and this kind of thing. And it was like, what's happening that everybody's asking the same question? Like, mm-hmm. It was just this bizarre thing. And I actually haven't heard it in a while. So it's like, whatever was happening, whatever movie or song is out, maybe it's passed. But what's interesting to me about this verse is at the end of verse 4, it talks about the old order of things have passed away. And there seems to be this idea of something new, something different, right? It's not going to be the same world that we have now. And because in this world, there's also going to be no more death, no more mourning or crying or pain, right? That means this is a different place in our existence right now. And I think all of that is going to play a part into, you know, our ability to be able to, quote unquote, sin or, you know, suffering or do evil or any of these kind of things, because it seems like there is a drastic change between what we live in now and what will be. And I think that's going to be important. I mean, we'll be in the presence of God, but based off of what you think about when angels sinned, I mean, some would say, well, they sinned in the presence of God. Some might say they sinned later when He created earth and they sinned down here. So that may or may not get us closer depending on where you land on that. But I do think that what makes it different is we oftentimes just envision this world, but just a new world with just Christians. Mm-hmm. And I actually think that it seems to me that there is going to be a drastic shift in not just our relationship with God, because we're going to be so intimate, but just in the very way that we exist with Him.
Yeah.
Yeah, well.
Throw us an easy question now.
Yeah, gosh, Derek.
Are you having fun?
Yeah, that was great.
Yeah, well, it does kind of come back to, so in essence, it's not even overriding necessarily the will, depending on theological perspective, but it is this sort of, what I'm hearing is that you are sort of choosing or being chosen. That's the question, isn't it? But there is this willful act in which you are saying, I don't want to be like I am. I need to be more like him. And so it is this desire to become more like Christ, who is God. And then if that actually is what happens, then we know that God either can't or won't sin. Now, which, and that gets into something that I've been asked before that I thought would be interesting to discuss here. Just quickly, we are sort of judged for falling short of the glory of God. Now, do you think that's, if God can't sin, is it fair to be judged by that standard?
My quick answer to that, and people probably won't like this answer, and it probably seems like a cop-out answer. It's like, but it is so difficult to compare ourselves to the being that created us. Like, and I think we so easily want to put God into our own image. And so we get really frustrated when he seems to operate a little differently than us or have standards. I'm like, my answer is no. I don't think that's unjust at all. I'm not the one that created it all. Like, and you can have a problem with the way he created it, but it's just like, I think there's a real sense of almost like arrogance behind that question, as in like, well, surely if I can think like this, and I don't mean that towards anybody that's wrestling with that question, but I do think one of the most humbling things about Christianity is that, gosh, the gospel is that you're so broken and flawed that it was nothing short of God himself taking on your sin. And yet at the same time, it's God himself was willing to take on your sin. So there's the humiliation, but then also the uplifting in that. And I think that's a beautiful thing. But why we would wrestle, like, why would that be unfair? That's only unfair is if it was another human that did all this and then demands you to. It's like, no, he is perfect. He is outside of all of this. He is the unmoved mover. Like, it's really hard for me. I don't wrestle with that question probably as nearly as a lot of people.
Well, and that's really good news. To,
yeah,
like, we don't want a God who can do these things, because you think at this point in history we would have made him mad enough to decide to not be good.
Yeah.
And so thank God that he can't be evil.
Yeah.
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 Yeah, I agree. I think it's good news. But I get why people may be frustrated with that. But again, I don't know if any of this comes down to a genuine question of like, I don't know if I want to believe. It's more like, can I find a hole so I don't have to believe, versus is this a real question? Mm-hmm. Like, so for example, say we can't sin in heaven, or we don't have the ability. What's that change right now? Like, why do we have to have that answer? We really don't. It's more of like, how can I prove now that I don't have to believe that? And I think that we need to go further back and say, why don't you want to believe this? And this isn't me reading into why somebody is the way they are, but I do think there's something more, because I do find the answer to that question, say we had it. Actually, God made it a way, so you have free will and you can't sin. It's like, what's that do for you? What are we doing now? It doesn't change much. And so it makes me think even, and I've seen this in my own heart, I got to go further back and asking, why am I even wanting the answer to that question? Is it come down to something much deeper? And I think it does more often than not.
Yeah. Well, it's hard to stay angry too if at the same time we know that God has reached out to all of us and given us that opportunity through the gospel, through his work on the cross. Yeah. We're going to wrap up here quickly, but I just want to ask one more thing, because I think for a lot of people, this is the first time they've heard this. I think the answers that that you all have given have been great, and they're going to say, oh, okay, these are the things they're talking about when they say God can't do everything. And these are great things for God not to be able to do or not to do. But I would wonder if someone could just, you know, I want to end all of these with saying, just give the people some hope. If there's anyone out there that is a little worried about hearing God can't do things and think, well, can God then not interfere in my life? Can he not rescue me from this? Can he not heal me of this? Whatever that would look like. Give the people some hope before we close.
Each of us or just one?
Oh, I'll let you pick.
quickly, rapid fire. Zandra, start us off.
Oh, I'm still looking it up.
All right, I'll
I'm
start.
I'm trying to go to Hebrews.
Well, someone
she's looking.
Someone pastoral.
Sorry. Hebrews 6. Wait, oh, nearly there. This isn't my Bible. I just picked it up randomly.
It's my Bible.
Oh, no, I'm pulling your notes out.
It's okay.
I'll just summarize. Somewhere in Hebrews 6.
The Zandra translation. Let's see, see where this goes.
Zandra Living Translation. Yeah. It's a lot of heresies in there, guys. Yeah. Well, basically it says that God cannot lie. And because of that, we have hope in him. Because of that, we can come to him for comfort. So the things that God cannot do give us hope and comfort in who he is. Because again, all of this comes back to his character. So I would say if anyone's out there and they're worried about what God can't do, to go to the scriptures and see what do the scriptures say that God can't do. And I think when you do that, you will find a lot of hope and a lot of comfort, and you'll find yourself coming near to him and not further away.
Yeah. Thanks. Yeah. I love that passage too. Hope as an anchor for the soul. Yeah. Beautiful. Well, guys, thanks for joining us today. I hope you had fun. I think we had fun.
I thought I was going to be able to get an answer there, and you just cut me off. So whatever.
It's fine.
I'll get him next
with
time.
My
That's great.
Answer.
Yeah,
thanks, Derek.
Well, yeah, the Lord does not want to. We'll see you all next week. Go ahead and comment on things, like things, do all those things that people do. And if you want your question answered on the podcast, email us at where we begin @lightengroup.org. Thanks, guys. Take care.